Hey, John.
Hey, Nick.
Do you want to hear this song I've been working on?
Yeah, that, right. Absolutely.
I've been singing it with my daughter. It goes like this. Old Mike Myers had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. And on that farm he had some bodies, E-I-E-I-O. With a ear and a...
Oh, yuck. Yikes.
You don't like it?
Yeah, and this is Stranger Still.
Welcome to Stranger Still,
podcast where we watch
what
with your ears. I'm John Began.
You watch it with your ears. You ever talk to someone and they're like, "I was just watching your episode. I just listened to your episode."
You heard dummies say that
all the time.
Oh my god,
you should say that.
Take their phone and unsubscribe them. Embarrass them.
Like sometimes I accidentally refer to our listeners as watchers
on the wall.
What?
Watchers on the wall.
I don't know what that is.
Game of Thrones, I think.
I don't. Do I look like a guy who? Okay, never mind.
Yeah, you do.
I do. John, it's October month. You know what that means? We're actually in the middle of it.
Right.
Like this is smack dab in the middle of October month. I assume that I'm saying that right.
Does it feel like it? Do you feel like you're in the middle of a pumpkin pie?
Oh, I thought you asked if it feels like I'm saying it right. It doesn't feel like
October month pumpkin pie.
October month pumpkin pie.
Sweet American Iowa pumpkin pie. Get right in there. Snuggle right up because it's October month, fellas. Trying to give it more of a rural taste, you know, like autumn-y.
Especially because we're talking about farms today.
And that's where
very
we're gonna...
fitting, yeah.
Thanks. Got to get y'all warmed up.
We don't say y'all, do we?
Like I guess I do pie. Sometimes. Y'all say rough.
We do?
So it's on top of your house is a roof.
Oh, no, we don't say that. Uh-huh. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't say that. Okay. I say roof.
Good.
The
that's
roof.
Good.
The roof.
The roof is on fire.
The roof is on fire. No, we're not that folk. I don't know what that means. We're off topic already, man.
Man, there should be like a folk meter.
In. Yeah. Every time I say a folkism,
yeah,
make a tally.
Sound just like Simon and Garfunkel. All right, let's get into it. Now everybody's all cowboyed up, ready to farm.
Yeah, I was gonna start off by saying that. I've noticed this month we're not really talking about spooky things. We're talking about spooky adjacent things. Things that seem spooky but actually aren't. Like voodoo seems spooky but it's not. And what else did we talk about? I already forgot. I forget. What was it? Now I gotta look back on my notes.
Wow.
Well, you're not helping either.
No, I'm just watching you
the
in wonderment.
Movie sets, those ended up not being that spooky in my opinion. People might disagree.
Well, Nick, you can't... I mean... Let's part this veil a little bit.
Yeah.
Is that what people say?
Yeah.
That some if you're just open minded to believing ghosts and you don't think that these things are real and you're in control of the research, come on.
That's true. Well, this is another spooky adjacent thing.
But it's adjacent to something actually spooky.
Death. Death and dead bodies. And I do want to give a special shout out to my lovely wife, Shelby, for suggesting this. She became interested in this years ago when she read Mary Roach's book, Stiff.
I think her friend Paige read it too.
Maybe, yeah.
And because I got an insight source of resource.
Farms.
I said, what can you tell me? And they said, soupy is a word that will come up.
Soupy. Mm-hmm. Well, it turns out, as you guys know by the title, body farms are the coolest thing that people are way too uncomfortable to talk about. And so we're going to do that. So this episode is going to get a little nasty. We have to put this disclaimer in. You're like, at this point, do we have to? And I was like, yeah, we do, unfortunately. But we have to, for this episode, we have to put on our post-humanist hats, realize we're all going to die someday.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm. And the only way to figure out what happens after death is to not be squeamish about studying it, right? Is
yeah. I mean, you could be squeamish while you're studying it, but just work through it.
Yeah.
Try your best.
Yeah.
So I watched some gross stuff today.
Yeah, it is grisly, but it's super fascinating. So I want everyone to stick in there because this stuff is really cool.
And sometimes,
yeah,
heartwarming.
Yeah,
we'll get to that after the break.
Yeah, way at the end of the episode. That's a Hail Mary of a teaser.
Uh-huh.
So John, with all that being said, what happens when you die?
You want the long answer or the short answer?
Let's start with the short answer and go from there.
Okay. You're not around. Like you don't oh. You're not there.
So what's the long answer?
In the beginning of the cosmos when the stardust met the
uh-huh.
ex- explosive rate of the atmosphere and created life. We used to be bacteria. And then the bacteria like had babies and grew into people. And we're like, oh, we're kind of like bacteria because we still die, except for the tardigrades. They don't die.
They never die.
They live forever. Look it up.
What if
I read a book for once? That's the long answer.
What if I told you up until like the 1970s and 80s, we had like no idea of what happened after death. Like, we had an idea, sort of, but we were so bad at it that in the early 70s, there's this guy, you've heard of him, named Dr. William Bass. And in 1971, he became the head of the University of Tennessee, Knoxville's Forensic Anthropology. Oh my gosh, I can't mess up this word now because I say it about 100 times in this episode.
Get off on the good thing.
Forensic Anthropology Department.
Wonderful.
So Dr. Bass was frequently tapped by Tennessee police departments to help figure out and advise on corpses, figure out when they would have died, how they died, identification, that sort of thing. And around this time, there's a case where the grave of a Civil War colonel named William Shy had been disturbed. Someone had seemingly exhumed the body, and the body that the police found was incredibly fresh for a colonel that that died 100 years ago. So the police thought, and Dr. Bass later agreed, that someone had taken Colonel Shy out of the grave and replaced it with a fresh body to try to cover up a murder and hide the corpse, right? Later, they compared teeth and clothing and determined that the corpse was definitely 100 or so years old and did in fact belong to Colonel William Shy, and it was just really well preserved.
I guess he'd, you know, dying in the basement of the pickle factory helped.
It goes a long way, right?
Right.
So he was kind of dumbfounded that he was so far off that he said, something needs to be done about this. Like, we don't know anything about how a body decomposes under different conditions. So he did something about it. And he started an outdoor forensic anthropology research laboratory, or a
body farm. Killer house. Oh, body farm.
So I thought it was funny that while researching this, I was on ResearchGate, which is like a website and an app for research papers, and it had this pop-up for other research articles that I might find helpful.
Oh, goodness.
And it said, interested in more articles about farming? It's not the kind of farming I'm interested in. Very personalized. They made sure they knew what the hell they were talking about. Mm-hmm. But in case you haven't guessed by now, body farms aren't where you grow bodies. They are. We'll get to that.
Unless you're pregnant and you work on a body farm.
That's true. That's interesting. I never thought about that.
Open
angle.
Your mind, Nick.
It's galaxy brain right there.
Thank you.
So I've seen enough TV and movies to have heard terms like forensic pathologist or forensic psychologist, but forensic anthropologist was a first for me. So I want to take a quick moment to describe what that is just for our audience. And I also thought it was funny that this topic got brought up because Shelby and I the other day, my wife, were having a nice discussion. We were trying to figure out what the difference between an archaeologist and a paleontologist was. Mm-hmm. And that one's easy enough. An archaeologist
evolves into a paleontologist in Pokemon.
Right. Yeah. You give them a fire stone and they go,
Eureka, yeah. I found it.
So archaeologists find relics and ancient artifacts to see how people lived, whereas paleontologists find fossils to try to figure out what Earth was like a long time ago and what it was like to live on Earth. And they study diets and all that stuff to figure out what the Earth was like.
And can you give a shout out to the internet for finding that out? Because could you imagine having that argument 20 years ago and the library is closed on a Sunday and you have to wait till tomorrow to settle an argument and drive to the library?
We got to search the entire Encyclopedia Britannica.
Life used to be like that, Nick.
Yeah, I know. Thank you, Google.
Because an argument on a weekend is the worst when the library is closed.
So then that discussion led to what's the difference between an archaeologist and an anthropologist. And it turns out that archaeology is considered a branch of anthropology, whereas anthropology focuses on social, behavioral, and physical science and evidence to figure out what different cultures were like in history, whereas archaeology focuses more on the artifacts to tell the story. And this all sounds like the setup to a joke that's like a paleontologist, an archaeologist, and an anthropologist all walk into a bar, but I haven't figured out the punchline yet. So basically, anthropology is the study of humans, and you can break that down into biological anthropologists, cultural, linguistic, or forensic. So going back to my original point, forensic means that it's using science to study a crime. So forensic anthropologists are...
crime-solving, time-traveling...
human studiers.
Human studiers, yeah.
Yeah, that's perfect. So going to the source, the University of Tennessee, Knoxville, their definition is, generally speaking, forensic anthropology is the examination of human skeletal remains for law enforcement agencies to help with the recovery of human remains, determine the identity of unidentified human remains, interpret trauma, and estimate time since death. So they're looking at dead bodies.
They watch them turn into spooky skeletons.
They watch them turn into spooky skeletons. And they try to...
or not spooky skeletons. I mean, sometimes I bet this stuff is a little more grim and serious.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a skeleton inside every one of us if you believe in yourself.
If you believe in that mm-hmm. sort of...
science.
Crackery. So forensic anthropologists are trying to figure out, like, the who, what, when, where, and whys of someone's death, right? Mostly right. for crime. And it's thanks to many forensic anthropologists that we now know what typically happens to a normal body after death. Back to the original question, John.
Thanks to our buddy Bill.
Yeah, and many other body farm researchers. Farmers. Yeah, that's probably a better way to say it. Can you imagine they're just out there with like a stalk of wheat between their teeth?
Oh, there's no way they couldn't.
Looking at these bodies, yeah.
Are you kidding me? That's what I do, a lab coat and a wheat in my mouth.
Someone make a fan art, please.
Man, I wish we had fan artists. This is another reason we gotta grow.
I know.
This is why we gotta get more people in our Facebook group, and we gotta crack that case, you know?
Solid plug there.
All of you can add people, by the way. Like, you know that, right?
Yeah.
I asked them, not you.
But, oh, okay. Sorry. I know that I can add people.
Yeah, so can they.
Yeah.
And them and all of them.
Yes.
Every one of you.
Every one of you. So when a body begins decomposing, like it starts decomposing very soon after the heart stops pumping blood, because as oxygen stops getting sent to cells, those cells start to die. So after 3 to 7 minutes, brain cells start to die. And then after several days, skin cells and bone and muscle cells start to die. And then blood, like, immediately starts to leak out of your capillaries and into your lower extremities. After 3 hours, the muscles in your body will stiffen in what's called rigor mortis. I think most people are familiar with that. That'll go away in about 3 days. The temperature will start to leave the body and be gone after only 24 hours, which is called algor mortis, or algor mortis, if you want to...
Was it named after him?
Yeah. No, it wasn't. I'm sure it's Latin. So as more cells die, they release different kinds of bacteria, and these bacteria go around inside your body, eating up all of the solid cells and fluids.
Which are in you right now already.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
They're just waiting for you to die.
Yes,
getting ready
they are.
To chomp down.
So they take all these fluids, start converting them to gas, and we've all heard that bodies can bloat after you die, and it's because of the gases released by these bacteria.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that's how ghosts are made.
It
kind of just evaporates.
Yeah, ghost busting is actually just like corpse fart busting, really.
Oh, good. My favorite topic.
Farts or ghosts?
Both.
So anyway, these gases can cause your body to bloat up to twice its normal size. There's sulfur that's released,
which is a good defense mechanism if you want to scare predators.
Yeah. The predator or just predators?
Predators. If you just, you bulk up double in size, you just have to die, I guess. If you could reincarnate. Wow. Have you seen the movie recently?
No, practicing? I'm really good at it. So sulfur also gets released, which can cause the skin to start marbling with a yellowish color. And the gases released can start to attract animals and insects, which is where... like vultures start coming in and flies will come in and flies will come along, lay like 300 eggs and move on with their day. And once those hatch, maggots will start to come out and eat the outside of the body.
This is a lot.
It's appetizing, right? Just bear with me. But apparently maggots will usually start at the face, which can, like, the body will still be bloated and the skull would just be like this blackened husk because the maggots have already eaten all that. Then after about 3 days, the body starts to expel a bunch of gas and nitrogen-rich fluids, which can actually kill off, like if it's in a plane of grass or something, it'll kill off all the plant life and leave like black marks around you, which is kind of weird. And then after a few weeks, the maggots and flies will basically finish off the flesh of the body, leaving a dried out husk of whatever skin remains and the bones underneath it. So,
what did you eat dinner already?
No.
What are you gonna have?
salad.
Salad. Okay.
So, I guess the surprising thing for me was it only takes like a few weeks. I figured decomposition took years, but it only takes a few weeks for like a body to get worn out and consumed by the elements.
Yeah.
And how do we know that, John?
Because of Bill.
Because of Bill Bass. Have I switched between bass and bass yet?
Ooh, and back to
I was really afraid
back
of that.
To home base.
Back to basics. So the popular... What?
I'm just saying, I hope that's... I hope he utilizes that catchiness somehow.
Yeah. So the popular term...
And hold on. We're talking about the guy that does have like a 5-minute documentary. If you search Body Farms on YouTube, mm-hmm. He's the first thing that pops up, right?
Yeah.
And then there's this one scene where he's studying the farms and he's got different states of decomposition.
Yeah.
Are you going to get to that? You're getting to that now, right? So
yeah.
I don't want to ruin anything.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's talk about the body
But
farms.
There was a scene that made me laugh.
Yeah. So we'll circle back, dog ear that for me. But the term body farm actually came from a novel published in 1994 by Patricia Cornwell called The Body Farm. Normally, you want to call them like outdoor anthropology research facilities.
Yeah.
But body farms is a lot easier to say. So they're these huge plots of land. They don't even have to be that huge, I guess. Some are smaller than an acre. Some are five acres.
But keep in mind, you can't start a body farm after you already start collecting bodies. You do have to get permission before you start collecting bodies.
Otherwise, you're just a serial killer.
I want to make sure that all of our listeners that are thinking about mm-hmm. starting their own body farm mm-hmm. know this, that you can't do it post-op, post-death. It's got to be before.
Yeah. So they set these huge plots of lands. These forensic anthropologists set out different bodies in different conditions. And before body farms, we basically just studied the corpses of pigs, which we still do in some situations to study other things, but we use their corpses to study decomposition. And Dr. Bass started University of Tennessee Knoxville's body farm sometime between 1972 and 1981. I call this out because I saw both dates. And I'm going to go with 1972 because I got that date from the most credible sources, whereas the 81 date came from The Atlantic and Forbes, and the other ones came from like actual research papers, so I'm going to go with that.
Weird.
So I don't know. I don't know if something important
difference.
Happened in 81.
Yeah.
But initially, Dr. Bass got his corpses from unclaimed bodies from medical examiners in the area, and now they're provided by people that have donated their bodies to their scientific research. So they have right now 4,000 people that have agreed to donate their bodies after their expiration.
It's
and
big
they
crop
it is, but they're still taking donations because
is that even respectful to call them crops? Then why did you just pass over that? Like
I did.
Nothing? Wow.
Well, yeah, because like they've agreed that they're gonna donate their bodies, right?
Yeah.
To this farm, so
it's for good cause.
It is a good cause, and I think they've used almost 2,000 donated corpses over the last 30 to 40 years, and now they place these bodies on plot. They have 3 acres. And they just put them in different configurations. There's other body farms around the world. There's 6 other ones in the United States at different universities. I saw one in Australia. I think one is started up in India. But there's a great need for many more for reasons that you'll understand in a little bit. But the goal of these body farms is to understand what happens to a body under different conditions and to what to expect at different stages of decay. They'll start off by usually putting the bodies both naked and clothed and taking them out to like an area of grass. Sometimes they'll cover them with a metal cage so animals can't get to it, like vultures or scavengers. But sometimes they'll just leave it out in the open to see what scavenger animals will do to the body. They'll also place bodies in the shade to get different temperatures throughout the day. And then from there, they'll place bodies wherever you might find a body.
Yeah, that was one of the most chilling parts was Bill, who's such a, like, just a sweet older man. And he's like, beloved. And in the documentary, mm-hmm. they interview people that interact with him. But there's one part where he's explaining that one of the common things to do, well, when you go out there and you kill your wife, did you see any of this?
No, I didn't.
Or you basically said that people, well, you killed your wife or you killed your husband, mm-hmm. now you got to get rid of it. So you dig it in the backyard mm-hmm. and someone's going to come over and say, oh, what are you digging over there? And you got to say, oh, I'm pouring concrete for this patio.
Yeah.
Well, that happens. That's something that's popular in our culture these days.
Yeah. And
he's like, so he had a body that was underneath concrete
yeah.
and then the layers chipped away so you could see what happens to it.
Yeah.
Just like, I guess you get so desensitized to that over time.
Right. You kind of have to, I imagine.
That's why what made me chuckle a little bit was how comfortable he was when a skeleton bone fell from a hill and he kicked it back up the hill. Like, oh, you got to get your back with your buddies up there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jesus.
I never thought about how common it would be to bury a body under like a patio that you're building, but it happened in both, spoilers for American Horror Story and Jessica Jones.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I guess that's part of the, it is part of our culture.
I think it's probably mostly from movie culture.
Maybe.
I mean, yeah. I don't know the stats on it, but yeah. You always think like, oh, they're going to put you in concrete.
Yeah, that's true. But they'll tie bodies to a tree. They'll put you in the trunk of a car. They'll put them in the trunk of a car in the shade. They'll put them in the trunk of a car in the shade wrapped in plastic.
Yeah.
They'll put them in the trunk of a car in the shade wrapped in plastic with the soundtrack to Shrek 2 playing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Water tanks. They also have weather stations to replicate different humidities and temperatures. You name it, they've probably done it. Put it in concrete.
Yeah, course. It's like the world's worst zoo.
Yeah. Can you just imagine like sitting around like, oh, how could we hide a body?
You just gotta go to Bill, the sweetheart of the world.
Yeah, they put him in shallow graves. All of the things in the movies that you've seen. And along the way, they'll collect hair and tissue samples and blood samples. They'll collect samples around the body as well. And there's a couple reasons that they do this. Different chemicals are released at different stages of decomposition, as we kind of mentioned. You'll find those in the hair and blood and tissue samples. And then the fluids and gases that leak out are also made up of different chemicals depending on when they come from the body. So they can find those in the grass or the leaves around the body. They'll also take pictures so they know what the body looks like, of course. So if you show up to the scene of the crime and it's in a water tank, you can say that body's been dead for 12 hours because you've seen that how many times before?
This is every day of your life.
Yeah. But then they'll also catalog what types of insects and animals come around at different times of the decomposition. And once they've done their research,
that makes it even weirder because then there's like local insects that will get you.
It's a necrobiome. We'll talk about it in a second. It's so fascinating. I love this stuff. So once they're done with their research, they'll either return the bones to the family for burial if that's what the family wants, or the bones can be donated to the university's skeleton collection. And they've got over 700 skeletons right now.
That's exciting but sad.
It is.
If there's that many people that are just like, eh.
But it's science, man.
Yeah.
Science is good. We don't know what happens until we've studied it. So what better way are we going to study it if people aren't like, yeah, sure.
I'm already dead. Go for it. Put me in a funny one.
There's always this meme that floats around. I don't know if it's true that like this elderly lady donated her body to science. So the Navy like strapped it to a bomb to see what effects it would have on a human body.
Oh, geez.
I think he sued them. I don't know if this is true. It's just what the meme says. So anyway, very grisly process, but it's all very important because we've learned a lot of things from this field of study. First and foremost, we've learned a lot about the time of death. Just given the information on Algor Mortis, I'm going to enunciate it.
That's how you're going to remember it?
Yeah.
But it wasn't named after him.
Algor Mortis.
He's a little bit younger, right?
Than
the name Algor Mortis?
Yes.
Okay.
Considering it,
like thousands?
Sure that's Latin. Yeah. So you can tell a lot.
I don't know. I saw a video online that said that he probably like thousands of years old and his scales.
He's a lizard, yeah.
Right.
A lizard man. So
making us believe in climate change.
What a jerk. He just wants his planet back. So we now know how quickly temperature can leave a body in the open, in the water, in the shade, in a shallow grave. We also know how clothing can affect decomposition. We found that also that bodies decompose twice as fast in water. Body in shallow graves decompose like a lot slower because much of the bacteria that leaks out of your body needs oxygen. So if it's not getting that oxygen, the bacteria just dies and flies can't get down there to lay maggots. So they can't get at the flesh. And they've also had a bevy of ages, genders, ethnicities. So they've been able to look at what bone structures look like at certain stages of decomposition to help identify unknown corpses, which is also really good. But my favorite thing, my two favorite things is that we've been able to use body farms to help find missing bodies. So if we know this person is missing and they find certain types of chemicals around where the scene of the crime happened, they can follow that trail of chemicals to eventually find the body. So if they say the body is emitting sulfur shortly after death, they follow that sulfur, they can go find the missing body, which is incredible. The other cool thing, I mentioned it before, is the necrobiome, which is like a small microcosm of food chain that appears around a dead body, because the bacteria releases the gas and the gas attracts the flies. Yeah. And the flies attract mice or spiders, and the mice attract snakes. So you start to notice when these show up in the area of decomposition, you can figure out how long the body's been dead, which is just incredible. So that's like invaluable science.
Ridiculous, yeah. So if there's one snake, it's been 1 month. If it's two snakes, it's been 2 months.
Yeah, and if the Pied Piper's there, it's been way too long.
Yeah.
And in my mind, it's like all of these things that we've heard in TV and movies recently and in books and textbooks that I feel like we just take for granted that were just discovered in the last 40 years.
Yeah, that's another thing after the break I wanted to discuss with the other documentary I watched today about doing the opposite of what these people do.
Yeah, we'll get there. I just want to talk really fast about the other body farms around the United States because they have a little bit of differences between them, areas of focus. And first, part of the problem is that we don't have enough body farms. There's 7 in the United States, but they're in Tennessee, North Carolina, there's 2 in Texas, 1 in Illinois, Colorado, and Florida, and then there's 1 in Australia, maybe 1 in India. I don't have much information on that. And they were thinking about doing one in the UK, but I don't think that's even left the ground yet, so to speak. But the problem is all of these bodies need to be super fresh. You can't have the body start to decompose for like a week and then take it to this body farm. So we need the body farms to be close to where these people die, right? Second of all, there are more environments in the United States than just these 6. Arizona had to ask one of the Texas facilities to do a study on how the desert affects a decomposing body because they don't have a body farm there. What about like the moist environment of the Northwest or a cornfield in Iowa or the Arctic desert of Alaska? These places don't have body farms. We don't know how bodies decompose in these environments. So there's a bunch of countries I also learned out there that studying dead bodies is illegal. So I think we just need to get over that as a society, as an earth, if you want to know what happens and solve crimes. And we've talked a lot about the University of Tennessee, Knoxville, but there's a few other differences at these locations. I did get these from Forbes. The one in Western Carolina University, North Carolina, has a special cadaver dog training where twice a year they train dogs to sniff out corpses. That's good.
How could you only do that in a day's work?
Well, I'm sure it's more than a day's work, but they hold like the trainings twice a year.
Oh, so it'll be like this. It could last longer than that. In my head, I was like, you bring out a dead body 2 times a year.
No.
And the dog goes, okay, I'll remember that forever.
No, they do all the normal body farm stuff, and then they have like these specialty things like the cadaver dogs. At the Texas State University, but you can't guess where that one is located. They do a lot of studies on vultures, and they've also worked on technology to identify dead bodies using drones and infrared photography. At Sam Houston State University in Texas, they focus on the insects of a dead body and the insects that it attracts. And they've also done a lot of 3D scanning of bones to catalog the sex of many corpses so they can help identify unidentified corpses.
Okay.
Then in Southern Illinois University, they did a bunch of stuff. They did a lot of studies on vultures and the effects of freezing a dead body. But they've also looked into this weird phenomenon that happens in the Midwest where there's a lot of slow, consistent winds, especially in Illinois, which causes natural mummification. So they've looked into that.
Oh, wow.
And they've also looked into the effects of a lawnmower on the dead.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And then they've also looked
You think they become so desensitized over time that they're like, oh, add that in. That'll be funny at the end.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, Bill's just sitting around like, what can we do next?
Oh, man. Wood chipper. Fargo did that.
Fargo, damn. Yeah. Illinois also looked into the effects of corpses captured in concrete. They did a lot of work on that. And then at Colorado Mesa University, they looked into the effects of high altitude and the effects a high altitude desert has on a decomposing body. So
can you imagine if Bill was like, oh no, cremate me, this is weird.
once he's expired. Yeah, that this is I What a
like that's a lot of pressure, man.
Yeah,
you just gotta kind of sign up.
I know. I just, this is so fascinating and important, and it is a little squeamish, but sometimes you just got to get over that to learn valuable information.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's important stuff. Everybody's gonna do it eventually, right?
Yeah.
So yeah,
I got nothing else. Do you want to take a break? First recap. Haha. Go.
When you die. Uh-huh. Sometimes it's good to look at you.
Yeah.
Before you
catch open and see how goodbye. That whole thing works. Let's take a break, and when we come back, you can tell me about the reverse of a body farm.
Mm-hmm. Recomposition.
Ugh.
I don't know if that's really what it's called, but that's all I'm going to call it.
I think that's fair.
We have a number of individuals who will kill their wives or kill their husbands. And what do you do with a dead wife or a dead husband? Well, you got to get rid of it, but how do you do that? Well, one of the things is to go out in the yard, mainly in the flower garden, and dig a grave. And somebody looks out and sees, hey, what you doing over there? Well, you can't say you're burying your husband. So you put a concrete slab over it and say you're pouring a little patio. And we have a lot of bodies buried under things like this in our culture today.
Here's the really cool thing. During October month, a lot of people listen in just to see how gross we can get. So if we cover a topic you think one of your friends, family might enjoy, send them a link to it.
Not only that, but I will haunt your photos if you do so, if yeah. you're so inclined. That's what I started doing in the beginning of the month.
Let's clarify that. Let's clarify that a little bit.
Why?
Because John will Photoshop a ghost or ghoul or serial killer into your photos. He's not going to stalk
you. They're genuinely haunted. This is a proprietary thing that I do. I add them into a cursed website.
It's Photoshop.
Wow.
Like that?
Some really good ad-libs coming out of your mouth. Can't wait to sell this product, your haunted photo. Photoshop.
Photoshop. Okay. Yeah, say it right.
I pronounced it wrong for once. So... yes. Please share them with your friends.
Also, if you want to leave us a review on iTunes, that super helps us out. You guys don't understand that the algorithm that iTunes uses bases it on how many listeners we get, but also how many reviews we have. So if you want our show to get popped up and get new listeners, leave us a review. It's super easy. And we just got a new review, John, from Baker Girl 420.
Hell yeah. Yeah.
They left us a 5-star review with the title "The Minimum Star Requirement."
Oh my goodness! They knew they're a real fan.
They know they're in on it. They said, "I came to the show through Creepypasta, the Creepypasta podcast. Rest in peace, sweet baby angel." And I binged the entire back catalog in a few weeks.
Whoa!
My job allows me to listen at work, and now I have a problem.
If we were standing behind them, and talking, they would think that they just have to hit pause.
Right? They'd be like, "Shh,"
because they're so used to it at this point. Wow!
Nick and John have a true best friend chemistry that reminds me of talking with my best friends. That's true. We hate each other. Mm-hmm. They're funny and informative. I believe in paranormal and supernatural things, but I also love to hear the science that goes along with it because I think magic and science intersect. Hey,
look at that.
That's awesome.
Magic is just science.
It is.
With
stuff written down.
With stuff, yeah.
They're not afraid to be wrong, and the Facebook group is a kick to be in. Hey, we even plugged our Facebook group. I feel like we wrote this.
Yeah. Sounds like every Flophouse accusation when they accuse Dan of writing the letters. Yeah. I listened to that a lot.
Definitely going to keep listening. P.S. October month. Did I say it right, John? This is the best time of the year.
See, now, this is where it gets really tough, too, because we've talked about this before.
Because I
spelled
it.
You said it incorrectly, but she spelled it right.
Right. PPS, everything can be traced back to ancient Egypt, and it has all kinds of shook. Listen to literally any episode, and this will probably make sense. All in all, this is a great podcast, and I'm sorry for rambling, but they are so funny, and there's so many great jokes to reference. 10 out of 10.
Look at that.
Thank you, Baker Girl.
10 out of 10. That's the next level minimum requirement.
Yeah, we can't even do that on iTunes. 5 stars. Yeah. Someday iTunes will be like, you know what? They deserve a 10 out of 10.
That was so sweet.
Yeah. So, John, you want to talk about the reverse of body farms?
Yeah. And now we've got, So let's talk about recomposition a little.
Yeah.
So this is just, thank you I want to give a shout out to the YouTube algorithm for showing this to me.
Yeah.
It just played next, then I just started watching it.
Yeah.
But this was, all of a sudden I started hearing Spanish. I was like, okay, this is not the same documentary. And I looked up and I watched this dude and I learned all about his doctor practice. Where is this? I think I even had this on here. So, I started learning a little bit about recomposition methods, which this guy has a special solution. And the only thing that he shows,
I assume it's proprietary.
But he does use, dry distilled water.
Okay.
And then that's something. The only ingredient they would let us show.
Yeah.
It was a motherboard video. It was called Reviving the Dead with DIY Forensics, Still Life Full Documentary.
Motherboard is like a, is that a Vox?
They're kind of like Vox or Vice or Now This.
Oh, I was thinking of Vice, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway,
their Vice is right next to it, next.
Yeah.
There's this gentleman, his name is Dr. Alejandro Hernandez Cardenas.
Yeah.
And he brings the bed back to life. He's Mexican.
Yeah. But it's not actually life. He fills them with
this special serum that he created in a tank. Yeah. So he lays the body in a tank.
Uh-huh.
And he
A dead body.
And it doesn't have to be newly dead.
Uh-huh.
This could be something that's been decomposed to the point of it can't be identified.
Yeah.
And once it's in there, it rehydrates the fingers. It reverses rigor mortis.
Mm-hmm.
It adds color. It fills out their lips,
mm-hmm.
and it actually takes away the first layer of the epidermis.
Uh-huh.
So they go in, they scrub off the first layer of skin, and then all the tattoos reappear. Like all that stuff that like started, you thought that was gone. That layers down
mm-hmm.
is reinvigorated.
So you could identify them with
right.
the tattoos, but you're also telling me that like their hands will unfurl.
Yeah. So if they did have rigor mortis set in where they were too stiff, they'll become a little more flexible
mm-hmm.
and they'll be able to take proper fingerprints
yeah.
that didn't exist because they were too small
uh-huh.
because they were like the skin shrunk or something
yeah.
like this. But it was really, really interesting to watch and learn about like recomposition because it's also used for, where I said heartwarming, they'll get open casket funerals now
yeah.
where they could have not had that because of the decomposition
right.
rate.
So if the body had sat out for 3 weeks before they found it and its maggots got to it, it's all shriveled,
mm-hmm.
they can fill it with the essence of life.
Of Dr. Alejandro Hernandez Cardenas' special potion.
His special potion.
Yeah. his state-of-the-art stuff.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
He's like... do you think he's tried like putting electricity in it just to see if the body comes back alive?
At least once.
He's just like, no one's looking. He sticks a toaster in there just to see if it comes back alive. Frankenstein
style.
Yeah,
at least he probably, spooked his coworkers with that a couple times.
Yeah.
With some puppetry. Maybe bring in like a fake body for the day. Yeah, I'm going to say it's fake. You don't do it to a real one.
Yeah, he's got a whole ventriloquist act.
He loves Halloween.
Yeah.
Oh no.
That's awful.
Yeah, no, but really it's really good to watch if you check it out. Just search Reviving the Dead, and it's motherboard, but it's also pretty grim. Like they get into some dark stuff too.
So cool, awesome stuff. Technology is just crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's gonna get cooler, man.
Yeah, dude,
it's a reason to try to live as long as you can so you could get the
you can see
the iPad 30 that scans through your head with x-ray vision.
Yeah. And
no radiation.
I don't think that's how it works, but we'll
try. As long as you have your Apple chip, it doesn't.
Oh yeah,
in your brain,
you gotta get that.
Mm-hmm.
But then you get secondhand iPad,
and then you gotta
radiation.
get the adapter eventually.
Yeah,
and otherwise your brain starts working slower.
Yeah, I'm still Nick.
I'm still John.
And this is Stranger Still.
I give you the incredible flying machine.